It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
And Mark Holland sitting in as well, running things behind the scenes. And got Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor. We both got the memo about the yellow shirts today.
Yellow shirts look good.
Yeah. Hey, you've got a good subject today that I think everybody, if you're married, stay tuned for tuning up your marriage. That's our subject today.
Yes, we're going to talk about that today. All the time in counseling, and married couples come in for counseling in different conditions. They're, you know, but a lot of times it's not a traumatic or very serious thing that's gone wrong with the marriage, like an affair or something like that. It's little things, and so a lot of times people their relationship just needs some tweaking and some tuning up, and you know, a lot of times Mark, people do good things in their marriage, but they don't recognize the good that's in the marriage because they're looking at marriage through a lens that the purpose of marriage and what it's supposed to be is a little bit blurred. And, you know, if you don't know the purpose of a thing, you could kind of liken this to playing sports. This was a problem that I had in, say, little league, baseball, football, those kinds of things, or even basketball, that I didn't recognize the problem at the time, but looking back, I see the problem that a lot of young kids will get out and play sports. At least they did in my day, and maybe kids are more savvy now, but a lot of probably kids that would have made good athletes didn't go very far because they didn't know the rules to the game, so they couldn't play with confidence. And it's kind of like that in marriage. If people have a wrong opinion or wrong idea of where the marriage is supposed to be going and what it's about, it's hard to recognize when it's going right or not. So that's part of it. So I wanted to kind of get in this, and I want to kick it off just with the understanding that it all starts, you know, successful marriage and the marriage tune-up. A healthy marriage, a good, joyful, let's say, marriage, begins with vulnerability. And that, of course, is openness before God and openness to one another. I always say, you know, if there's no vulnerability, there's not going to be a relationship. It starts there. It's the foundation of relationship. Remember, from Genesis, we have Adam and Eve created naked, it says, and they were naked and they were not ashamed. Mm-hmm. And that word ashamed, you know, we've talked about shame a lot on the show here. It's kind of the root. Shame along with fear is the root of all of our bad feelings. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't have those bad feelings. They didn't have shame. They were completely vulnerable with one another and they didn't have shame. And that's a condition that we're trying to work back toward. So the purpose of marriage, you know, is to make us human and keep us human. And as married couples, we have a duty before God to see that fulfilled for His higher purpose, the higher purpose that He has for mankind. So we begin with that, you know, understanding that, you know, what we're going to be talking about here is vulnerability, openness to God, openness to one another, a responsibility to God to manage our marriage in such a way. Doesn't just belong to me. It belongs to God. Mm-hmm. It belongs to the community.
Well, you say the model, too, that we get in Ephesians that some people have a problem with, though. The man lays down his life for his wife, and the wife respects and obeys her husband.
Yeah.
It's kind of simple as that, but sometimes don't like that.
That scripture, Ephesians 5:22-33, I just read it this morning, is powerful. It talks about Christ, you know, loving the church, laying down his life for the church, and then presenting the church to himself spotless and blameless. And I've recognized that that's my duty as a husband. And a lot of times when I'm talking to couples and they're sort of like pointing the finger at one another, you know, well, he, she, and then you kind of, you know, have to point out to the husband, did you remember that your duty before God is to present your wife spotless and blameless? That is.
Now, how does he do that? How does a man do that? How does he present his wife in that way?
Well,
what kinds of things would he do to produce?
Well, again, it begins with vulnerability, you know what? The image of Christ saying when he was hanging on the cross, say for example, and we've talked about forgiveness, but these are powerful words when Christ is hanging on the cross and he says, "Father, forgive them; they don't know what they're doing." What he's actually saying is, "God, Father, give yourself to them." Mm. They don't realize what they're doing, or more directly, give me to them. They don't know what they're doing. And so the husband, you know, is in a similar position with the wife, you know, that he begins with vulnerability, laying down his life, giving up his rights. And if he finds fault in the wife, it's really his job to say, you know, that could have been me. That might have been me. Let's start from there. And so, you know, and really sheltering and covering her, which doesn't make the woman weak. I've never believed that. I think that, you know, God created the woman as to challenge, and the man is not good without the woman. Mm-hmm. So I always talk about, you know, back again, the purpose of marriage is to make us human. You know, I always talk about a human is the husband and the wife. A human is in relationship. A human being is a being that's in human relationship. Otherwise, there isn't a being apart from that. So, so I never look at the woman at all as if I ever thought I could. My wife changed that. I never can look at a woman as inferior or weaker in that regard. Mm. She plays a specific role, and this is just the way.
But there are roles.
There are roles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. So yeah, marriage is then it's sacrifice and it's service, and so little things get in.
Yeah, we're talking about that the little, yeah. It's the Bible uses the term the little foxes.
Yeah, and Song of Solomon. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
tell us a little bit more. What does that mean?
Well, again, like a lot of times people will come in for counseling, and they not only don't have the big picture, but they don't realize the little things that they're doing that keep eating away at the relationship. I have just a short list here, and this is not exhaustive at all, but people can get the idea. White lies are things that we get away with in the marriage relationship. That would be like half truths or secrecy, and we've all done this. You know, I can remember growing up, and Dad would have us out, you know, and maybe we're shooting the gun, and he'll say, you know, now you don't have to tell your mother about this, you know,
right.
or mom's got you out and she's going to get you something that, you know, maybe Dad didn't want you, you know, you don't have to tell your dad about this, you know. Mm-hmm. And so white lies, they're not supposed to be doing any damage, but what they do is that they're a way of devaluing, you know, when the dad says to the child, you know, don't need to tell your mom about this, or the mom tells the dad, not only does it set the child up to maybe begin to be lying a bit and fibbing, you know, but it kind of dad's really devaluing mom, you know, you don't need to tell mom about this, you know, she wouldn't understand, you know, she, not thinking at the same level, or it could be,
so that would be definitely a little fox if you've got kids starting to, build up those kind of, us against them. Dad and the kid against mom, vice versa.
And it doesn't look like it at first, but what it does is it these small untruths turn out to be, they turn into compartments of secrecy, and then they promote disrespect down there.
Mm-hmm.
Other things that I see a lot, like subtle ways of devaluing, and things that we don't realize we're doing. You know, I might have a chip on my shoulder. I might be irritable one morning, and so I'm finding fault, and I'm condescending in my tone. And, you know, we sort of have this air of, well, people should recognize I'm not having a good day, and I'm just getting over it. But it's a way of devaluing the other person. And some of the things that also maybe go along with that, and again, these are things that we think we're getting away with, a little bit of arguing, bickering. Despising, I've got down there, was the interesting word. The word despise, the dictionary definition of despise is kind of interesting. It's just to think over or think around. And when we hear the word despise, we think that there's some real evil intent there. But not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily start with evil intent. It can just start with overlooking, thinking over or thinking around. I get the analogy or example, say, comes to mind of a administrator issuing a memo. Going to be a change of policy here. I remember one specifically where my wife was working at a hospital. It was the middle of winter, you know, snow and slush, cold out, and the hospital was on a hill, steep hill, and they were parking in the covered parking area. Well, there was a memo that came out: employees are no longer allowed to park in the covered parking area. Well, which meant that these nurses and workers were parking in the slush on the hills and trying to make their way up to the hospital through the rain and sleet and all this. And then they'd get up and they'd have to go through the parking area and it'd be empty. because all the, so that was the an example of someone, an administrator passing a measure without taking any thought of the effect that would have on other people. So that's an example of despising, thinking over, thinking around. And we do that a lot in marriage, and all these things, you know, a little arguing, bickering.
Little things, but they add up
they
to...
add up to distance.
Distancing. And,
psychological
and
emotional
sabotaging
distance.
Vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't think that these little things, but all of them together, less and less, I want to show less and less vulnerability to you because I'm getting more and more angry with you.
Yeah. And it becomes a way in our brain gets wired that way. We've talked about this before. We repeat attitudes, and our brain begins to get wired that way. And then it's very difficult to even imagine a different way of communicating. And that's one of the things I find is, you know, why is it so hard for people to change? Or why do we distance? We were going to talk about
this. Yeah, why do we distance? Yeah. It seems to be, is it just the law of entropy? Things tend to just kind of break down after a while, or what?
You might not be far wrong. Yeah. I didn't think about that, but I've always believed that you know that are these higher complex ways of thinking are, you know, that God is in nature from the ground up, and his nature is his nature. So we can actually probably look at, you know, just kind of the primal stuff of the universe.
Well, yeah, if you let it go and there's no investment in it, the weeds start growing, things start kind of breaking down.
Yeah, well, distance is first modeled. That's one way. You know, our parents are distant and the family is distant. You know, well, no, my parents weren't distant. I didn't know who they were. That's a lot of distance. That's an example of a huge amount of distance.
Right.
And we've talked about this before, and we'll talk about it again. We won't get into it today, but just ways of distancing. You know, someone might say, well, "No, our family wasn't distant. We were all just loved to be together." And you know, Dad was always telling jokes. But being together in the same place and interacting is not always a way of being intimate. A lot of times, my family communicated a lot, but a lot of that communication was superficial. And it was, even in the communication, there were ways of pushing people away. So, but it's modeled, it's learned, because even after we have a model through the way we grow up, and, you know, we have life experiences, and in life experiences, we learn certain relationships are painful, others aren't. So we tend to start distancing and arranging relationships that way. And it all ultimately gets back to our survival instinct. You know, I may be safer with certain people further away, and so it's fear-based, and it is what actually sin is all about, too, isn't it? Distancing, broken relationship, and that's actually the reason for marriage.
But marriage is the cure for a lot of this.
Yeah, marriage is fundamental in our the way that we address sin, because relationship is fundamental in the way that we address sin. So why is it hard for people to change? Well, first of all, a lot of times they don't think they can change, and so why try? Maybe they don't know where they're going in the marriage, where the marriage is supposed to go, so they don't know when they're right. Misunderstanding marriage to begin with, they have really no idea how to recognize success, and that's one of the things that people need to.
Well, we're going
to
talk more about how to change this and how to correct some of these problems in marriage. A marriage tune-up this week on Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor. I know a lot of the work you do is marriage-related, marriage counseling, couples therapy, and tell us a little bit more how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, phone number is 425-778-6169. You can contact me by email through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Yeah. More details as well at this other website, too, where a lot of your articles are.
ChristianCounselorsForum.com. And I'll mention an article that people could read in the next segment. I need to bring it back to my recall.
Well, we're going to take a break, and be sure and get in touch with Daniel if you do need some help. There's more details as well at KCISradio.com. Back with more of Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland and a marriage tune-up this week, how to tune up that marriage. We're talking about why it's so hard for people to change in marriage just before the break. And you mentioned your website, too, that's got some of your articles. You had this interesting article about the unlikely, what was it called?
Unlikely key to successful marriage. And I was going to relate that back to one of the things that we brought up in the early part of the show, where it's the relationship begins with vulnerability, and how that's a, it's almost counterintuitive. People would think about, particularly in our society where we're kind of atomized, we talk about individualistic approach to or viewing life and reality and that. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of entering into a marriage relationship with vulnerability, particularly women think, I'm not going to be vulnerable. Oh, no, I guess I shouldn't have said that because, you know, men think that just as much. But reading that article, I think vulnerability doesn't mean weak. It doesn't mean, you know, taking the short end of the stick. That's not.
It's actually sometimes very difficult to be vulnerable. It takes a real risk.
It takes courage.
Courage. Yeah.
It does, and it takes courage, and it takes vision.
Why we always think of men having a harder time being vulnerable than women? Do you think that's true? Or
well, I think men certainly struggle with ego. Let's put it this way, Mark, and I've made this distinction before. It's not so much for me ever about men and women. It's about masculine versus feminine. Because there are some women that struggle with ego because they have they're sort of a little higher on the masculine, and men that struggle less with ego, you know. But I think that the masculine side, for some reason, the masculine side of our humanness, let's say, struggles with ego, so we've all got some of it. So yeah.
But God has has the right to have the biggest ego of all, and yet he humbled himself and became a man. I mean, God seems to be able to handle vulnerability.
Yeah, God is about intimate relationship, and we're about protecting ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even in sending his son, you know, God is about being vulnerable,
Well, how to correct some of this stuff? So, number one, you say here, understand what marriage is, where it's heading, and what it's for.
Yeah, that would probably be an obvious starting place. You know, if I don't know where the ship is sailing, how can I at any point say we're going in the right direction or not? So, and I have an article too at the website. That's the current article at ChristianCounselorsForum.com is the purpose of marriage. And so I sort of outline there, but it's really about God created Adam and Eve human, God created the human Adam and Eve, for a reason. You know, we're created in the image of God, which I believe is intimately relational, and so we're required to have relationship. We're required to be vulnerable in relationship, and so we recognize marriage as kind of the quintessential relationship that's taking us in toward humanness, keeping us human, making us human, keeping us human, because our being human is a critical part of what God's plan for mankind is. So I think that it has a tool there. So understanding that that's where the ship is going will help us a lot of times to on our own be able to recognize where the process is off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, learn to and take the time to self-analyze. So this is very important.
Because you're always partially wrong. And a lot of times, you're always partially wrong. I've thought once or twice in my life that I proved myself wrong here, because there have been situations in maybe bickering with my wife where I've thought, okay, this time I was completely in the right. But as I've thought it back, you're always partially wrong. And so self-analyzing is a big part of getting rid of that sense that it's the other person's fault. And that's so much a part of bickering and arguing and that. Search me, O God, know my heart, try me and know my thoughts, David says in Psalms 139. I have to fix what's internal before we can address what's external. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when people are trying to learn to communicate, learn to trust, learn to forgive, they're trying to fix an external thing without first looking inside and saying, well, you know, how much of this is me?
Yeah. You know, wasn't that one of the primary goals of counseling and therapy is to try and figure out why you do, why you're acting. So I'm acting like this. Yeah. I'm having these problems in relationships. And so in therapy and in private counsel, you're trying to look at a person's background as that and what's driving that so you can understand why the way you are and then change.
Yeah. Well, self-analysis is certainly a big part of what I do because I believe if somebody can do that, then, you know, that's where I want to bring people to this place where they can figure it out on their own. You know, nobody wants to be a counselor.
And I mean, you and I are obviously both real fans of counseling and think it's important and valuable. But so many people think, I don't want to go back in the past. I don't want to blame a bunch of people for, but it's not about blaming people or blaming family dysfunction. It's about understanding so you can move forward. A lot of times we don't know what it is that's causing us to act the way we are.
A lot of times looking back at the family, what it did for me was to help me to recognize how I'm repeating the thing right here.
Yeah.
And you know, all those faults maybe that I can find in the family of origin, I'm sure my parents were telling me, now, don't do that. Don't you do that just because we do, you know. And so it's my job to try not to do it. And one of the ways I can best manage that is to try to recognize when I am.
Well, back into the marriage tin up here, your next point is learn to be fascinated by your spouse.
Yeah, and then
and fascination is a choice.
Somebody should write a book. Fascination is a choice.
Interesting. Well, why do you put it that way?
Well, love is a choice, we say. Yeah. But fascination is the choice. And I know that from experience of, not going to take a lot of time on this, but I can remember early on in our marriage where I wanted my wife to be fascinated with me. And it was a kind of a learning curve for me to figure out one day that I need to try to be fascinated about her, and I probably didn't use that word, but interested in and that. And the realization that came over time was, boy, you know, if I put a little effort into this, it almost kind of takes wings, and I almost do have a natural fascination for the way she lives life and her point of view. But it took, first of all, kind of me to prime the pump and say, you know, sort of kick myself in the rear and say, you know, ask some questions, contemplate the person, you know, contemplate the way they do things. And instead of always looking at, well, assuming that my way is best, why are you doing that way? Or, you know,
what if a person feels like, well, I think I've learned everything I can about you, and that's why I'm moving on to other things. That's kind of a cop out, isn't it?
Yeah,
but I think that's
right.
What we happen is but we really need to be students of our spouse.
Yeah.
Kind of really.
Because when you feel you've figured the person out, it's just because you haven't paid attention. We never get to the bottoms of ourselves, and just believing that God's put you with that person so that that person can teach you.
It takes help from God. I think it does take help from God too, the Holy Spirit. You got to pray when you pray for your spouse.
Yeah.
Pray when you're praying with them, or just praying for them, and asking God, show me what's going on here with my wife or my husband.
Yeah. I think that's why the vulnerability with God is primary, because when I'm vulnerable to God, I'm going to figure out that He's trying to talk to me through my wife.
Number four, make time and take time to be alone together.
Yeah, make time and take time life. because life can get busy. And I talk to people all the time that, you know, schedules are just crammed. But, you know, we got to look at the relationship is the most important thing we're doing on earth. Is that relationship and relationships, the final frontier, another article at ChristianCounselorsForum.com. Relationships are really all we're doing here. And so if I don't take care of relationships first, they're going to fall apart, and that's going to have an effect on everything. So they're really first. So I'm talking to people about married couples. You need to, if you want to learn fascination from one another or learn to enjoy one another, you need to start putting yourself in an environment where that can happen. And maybe that's my wife and I kind of found a way where we started years ago when we were down in Tacoma. It was like we could park in this certain parking lot, and it's kind of everybody has their magical place, and we could kind of walk down and staircase, and on the way down the staircase was the Starbucks, so we'd grab our coffee and scone and ride across the street and down to the waterfront, and we were alone, and we would sometimes take a devotional book with us, and the rain could be falling or whatever, but we would be alone, and some magic things happen then. You start to be vulnerable, and you start to let things down.
Very important. Number five, be objective about what you want to change and how you will go about it.
Because if you don't know what you want to change, you'll never get around to changing it. So we might
what you want to change about the other person or about yourself?
About the relationship.
Well, okay.
I would say not about the other person. I would say that would probably be last on the list, but certainly that could apply to things I want to change about myself, you know, and then things we want to change about the relationship. So we might say, for example, my wife and I might say, you know, we tend to argue a lot when we get home from work. That's our worst time. Let's not do that. Okay. How are we going to not do that? Well, first of all, we're aware that we do that. Sure. Okay. And then let's try this. When we come through the door, let's give each other a hug and just ask, you know, what was your day like? You know, let's try that. So we have what we want to change, and then the direction we want to change, and then what we want to do specifically to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do something every day to turn into the relationship, turn toward the relationship, in other words.
Yeah.
So agape as opposed to the default, which is distancing.
To distance, yeah. Mm-hmm. So intentional adoration is what I've got down there. We have to do something. The default of relationship, believe it or not, is that the longer we're together, the further we get apart. Mm-hmm. And the only way to offset that is to, on a daily basis, do something intentional about adoring and contemplating the other person and coming together. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I have here is don't let the sun go down on your wrath. And I want to take that a little bit to a different level, because a lot of times, say my wife and I aren't getting along, and we're going to go to bed. And so we say, oh, the Bible says we're not supposed to let the sun go down on our wrath. So anyway, I forgive you. You forgive me. Okay. Everything okay? Okay, fine. So we go to bed. So did we take care of the wrath? No, because the wrath doesn't have to do with our relationship. A lot of times, as I said, you have to fix the internal stuff before the external. A lot of times my wrath has to do with things in my inbox that I haven't taken care of. Hmm. Now, just saying I'm sorry to my wife doesn't resolve the sun going down on my wrath.
Mm-hmm.
I still have the anger. All I've done is push it down a bit. What I need to do is say, you know, where did that come from? What is it that I didn't take care of today? Mm-hmm. And so don't let the sun go down on not only superficially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the
So talking to your wife about that or talking to God about that stuff?
You know, first of all, talking to God, that idea of self-analysis, uh-huh. you know, and that's before God and openness before God. But sometimes too, you know, my wife, you know, I would say, you know why I've been snappy? It's because I didn't get this done today.
Mm, okay.
Or because I read this and it upset me. And so that's part of not letting the sun go down on my wrath, is figuring out why I got myself in that state to begin with.
Well, a little bit of a tune-up for your marriage today. It's obviously a big subject, and it's something that Daniel's very passionate about in his practice. Daniel, how do people get in touch with you for maybe more exploration of tuning up the marriage?
The phone number is 425-778-6169. By email, through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com. And then we've mentioned a number of articles here, and that's at the website ChristianCounselorsForum.com.
And you have offices in both Edmonds and Bellevue.
Edmonds and Bellevue, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So great resource, always great topics here on Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.